All right, everyone, welcome back. Today, I have with me Oli Gardner, who's a co-founder of Unbounce, which is a landing page software SaaS company, basically based up in Vancouver, Canada. So I've known Oli for a number of years now. I've been connected with them online. I think we first met in person, I want to say MozCon 2011.
I think so, yeah.
We played pool together. I'm pretty sure you beat me pretty badly, but it was fun. I remember we got Rand Fishkin doing shots at that conference, so that was good times. So Oli, thanks for being on. I'm super happy to have you. If you wouldn't mind, just introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us your background, who you are, what you do, all that good stuff.
Sure. And thank you for having me on, John. And interesting, this is always hard for me to do. So you were pronouncing my name Oli, and it's probably because I have blonde hair and I appear Norwegian or something, but it's Oli, like Oliver.
Okay.
But but it's interesting because in one of the first jobs I had in Canada when I moved over from Scotland, in my office there was a woman in there, just two of us in a small office in a big place. And she called me Oli. She's actually from Norway.
Okay.
And she was really attractive and I was really shy. So I didn't correct her for 6 months. And then one day I finally said, you know what? That's not how it's said. And she's like, why didn't you tell me? I said, I was scared. So it's been like an ongoing thing. So I feel I've grown as a person to be able to say it out loud. so there's the deep inside of me. I co-founder of Unbounce. Yeah. Live in Vancouver, BC. And yeah, we started Unbounce 8 years ago. We just had our eighth birthday.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Which is really weird. We were just talking about the fact that Creator was 2 years old. And yeah, time flies and time stands still. I think there are portions in that period that are really difficult, some that are easier, and they kind of come in waves.
Totally. So yeah, that's what I really want to chat about today. You know, as I was saying before we started recording, that I firmly believe that 90% of succeeding as an entrepreneur, at least, is managing your own psychology and pushing through those hard times. So yeah, I want to talk about kind of the story of Unbounce and the story of Oli as well, like, you know, going through that. Thank you for correcting me, by the way. I feel kind of embarrassed now that I've known you for 6 years and never pronounced your name. that's awesome. So why don't you give us kind of the founding story, I guess, of Unbounce, you know, because you're a co-founder, so obviously you have other founders, other co-founders as well. So I'd love to, you know, hear a little bit about that, and and then I'd love to just hear your take on, you know, what are some of the challenges, you know, you've gone through, and some of your own as well, since you've changed roles multiple times. I know now you're kind of an individual contributor, and before you're heading up marketing, and what's going on there?
Yeah, when there's six co-founders.
Wow.
Which is five still active.
Wow.
But yeah, it's a little insane, but it has benefits and negatives. The benefits, I think, far outweigh any possible negative. But we've all known each other, worked with one another on and off for 10 years prior to starting Unbounce, or 9 years at a startup back in the day, like before the dot-com crash, and different businesses leading up to create the Unbounce. And we'd all had most of us had a connection with marketing, either working in or on the tech side, people having to work and or service marketers.
Okay.
Nobody likes doing that.
No.
So we created Unbounce for a double-sided kind of benefit.
Okay.
Marketers needed to be able to build landing pages and take control of their own work.
Right.
And IT development, we freed them up to not be building marketing landing pages, because they don't want to do that. They want to build product.
Right.
So that's kind of why we did it.
Which you realize that, by the way, 8 years ago, 2009, like, you guys were way ahead of your time at that point.
Mm-hmm. There wasn't really, I mean, landing pages existed. That's why we knew we needed to do this. But in terms of companies offering this, there was one, Ion Interactive, but they were a bit more enterprise.
Sure.
And there was no one self-serve doing it. Although, exactly when we started, another company started.
I remember hearing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Performable. And eventually
so
they
instantly head to head. Right.
Yeah. Even though we were such leaders in the space immediately, it was, and that was good, I think, because that early pressure, and we went on to, you know, I guess, win that war, and they pivoted and became something else.
Sure.
But it was definitely nice looking back to have that, because we're a bit more ready. We were ready for when the competition came in the future, which it did, and there's a lot more now.
Sure.
So like one of the big benefits of six co-founders is we could do anything we wanted, right? Like in terms of skill set, we had it all covered. We didn't have to hire for a couple of years. The obvious downside is that you're splitting the company in six and not a more traditional one or two.
Right. And you have six salaries to cover off the bat and all that stuff. Yeah. Or people doing side work, but
Yeah. Well, some people had a little bit of money and some were totally broke.
Okay.
You know, it was a big risk for all of us starting this. You know, some people left an agency they'd built together.
Okay.
Some had a bit of money in the bank. I did not. I'd just gone through something called the consumer proposal, which is like a halfway bankruptcy thing. So I was completely broke.
Yeah.
So I took a small salary. Three of us did, and the rest earned sweat equity. So so some people have a bit more of the company now because of that.
Sure.
You know. Yeah. But once we could pay ourselves, it's all equal. We all have the same salary. We have since the day we all got paid, we have always earned the same salary as one another.
To this day, you still do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. And yeah, sometimes it's hard to remember back then. I mean, it was so hard at the beginning, but so exciting. You know, you don't mind working 16 hours a day every day because you're building this, you know, terrifying little baby.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't know what anyone's going to want.
Yep. So what was that shift like? I mean, going from you know, being the, you know, just the co-founders to, you know, basically realizing like you're finding product market fit, realizing this thing is going to work. And then what was that shift? I guess what I'm personally interested in these days is how do you go from, because Credo's kind of reached this point where it's like, it's grown to the point where like, I can't manage it myself. I had a part-time employee that recently parted ways with. And so now I'm doing that job again, right? And I hired for that position purposefully. But like Credo is at such a point where like, I can't manage it all myself, right? What was it like making that shift from it being, you know, the six of y'all to, you know, hiring? And what did that mean for, you know, relationships and roles and all that good stuff?
We had a part-time person initially as well, Sheldy. We worked with her in the past. She did like QA and support, and I believe she did it for free.
Wow.
Back then, she had another gig and she did this on the side for us because she wanted to be involved. I think we paid her a little bit after a while, or we just gave her some stock.
Yep.
So that lasted maybe 6 months or so, and that really helped because up to that point, you know, we were picking up the phone.
Sure.
And so she really helped, you know, take some of that burden away from us. And then our first full-time employee was a developer. And then after that, a couple of people for CS. And really, the people we hired early on are, some of them are like the biggest reason for some of our success, I think. They're still with us. I think our longest standing employees are almost 6 years.
Wow.
And they really have helped shape the company. And that's what's really cool, because you have us, but then we have these senior leaders that have been with us a long time. And to see them continue kind of our vision for what the company should be is pretty incredible. And we wouldn't, you know, our success wouldn't be what it is without some of the good decisions we made early on in our hiring. It's interesting though, thinking of like some of the hardest parts of the journey, the absolute hardest for me, and I've only talked about this, I've talked about it twice.
Okay.
Once was on a podcast that was not released.
Huh.
So this is probably a first.
That's going to be my tagline for this episode, by the way.
There was a point at the beginning, still the six of us, where, you know, we've raised very little money. At the beginning, it was friends and family. We raised like 50K total, I think, back then. We were under a million Canadian, or the entirety of our fundraising.
Amazing.
We got to the point where, you know, we were a couple of months in, we couldn't maintain the salaries, even though it was only three of us getting a tiny amount of money. So the decision, kind of, I remember Rick, our CEO, we went for a beer, and it got to the point where, okay, we can't afford this. You're going to have to fall on your sword. And, well, someone's going to have to fall on their sword and go and get work elsewhere and actually not be part of the company.
Wow.
For now, for an unknown period of time. And it was determined that marketing was the thing that could be sacrificed because the product couldn't stop being built.
Right.
There's some logic to that. It's also, you know, well, who are you going to sell this thing to if you're not in marketing?
Right, right.
And that
chicken
was...
chicken and egg.
Yeah, and that was heartbreaking. That was just soul-destroying to think that might happen. And I accepted it.
Yep.
And we told the team, this is what we're going to do. And then I went home. And then I was just like burned. I was just like, what am I going to do? I can't do this.
Had a few more beers and
Yeah, this is bullshit. We can't go down this road.
Yeah.
So I'd have to talk to Rick to get more detail because I blocked this from my memory for years.
Okay.
Like something reminded me. I was in Montreal hanging out with my friend Dan, runs our content.
Yep.
And the story came out organically. And it's the first time I'd remembered it. That was 2 years ago.
Wow.
Because it was that kind of traumatic at the time.
Yeah.
So I figured something out, which I do not remember.
Okay.
Some different math, a different way of doing something that meant this didn't have to happen.
Right.
Just some revelation. I came in, explained, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're totally right. Okay, great. We don't have to do this.
Whoa.
So that was a massive relief because I don't know what I would have done, where we would be if that happened, because our marketing was so fundamental to our success.
Yeah. Wow. So I mean, it's kind of founder drama, but it's also like you guys like knew each other so well that you could have this conversation and, you know, just be open about it and be like, hey, this is just the reality of what we have going on now. Right.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I think we need to do. But you still had a voice, you know, in it. It wasn't like the other five founders all got together and were like, all right, Ali, you got to go. Still wanted to call you Oli. Like, all right, Ali, you got to go. Right. But you're like this is what we think we need to do, but like, you know, let's keep talking about it.
Yeah, and I think I was helped a little bit in that because it had just been Rick and I. Carter, who's our chief product officer, he actually said, "Are you kidding me? Like, what are you thinking? Why are you okay with this?" Which kind of helped me go, okay,
you.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Exactly. He's like, we can't do this.
Yeah.
You know, because I was willing in the moment, like, oh, okay, I have to do this. But I hadn't thought it through enough.
Right.
And it needed someone else to say, whoa.
Totally.
You know, I'd be on my side. Because it was nothing about me. It was just happened to be that marketing was the thing that could be put on hold. But
right.
Yeah, but it couldn't be. There's no way.
Totally, yeah. You knew that it couldn't be, and you're like, well, I guess this thing's going to go belly up, right? And so, like, I got to figure out something else. But, yeah, I mean, and that's the value of, I think this is something that I didn't know that we'd get into in this call, in this, you know, in this chat, but, you know, that the value of having a community around, right? Like, whether it's your co-founders or, like, for me as a solo entrepreneur, like, I have mentors I can reach out to, like, you know, people that have sold companies, people that are running companies. I have a coach, you know, I have fellow entrepreneurs that I'm working that, you know, are at the same, you know, phase as me. Like, and, you know, I've recently been going through some, you know, thinking through some things and I've just pinged like 10 different people that I trust that have very different perspectives on it. And I'm like, point this out, you know, point out to me like where I'm wrong here.
Yeah. And that's really smart. We had some excellent advisors right from the start. Interestingly, we had five. We created an advisory panel board, and four of them put in a tiny amount of money as an investment, like $5,000.
Okay.
One of them didn't, which was Rand Fishkin. And not to discredit anyone else, but he didn't put any money in, but he has invested infinitely more time and guidance for us than anyone else,
right?
Even though they'd put in, you know, a little bit of money.
Totally.
So he's been incredible for us, as was Moz, you know, because they're kind of our big brother, you know. They're 2 hours south. They're a couple of years ahead of me in their trajectory, but similar models. And you just had Rand on, right?
He's going to be on, so he'll be on a couple of weeks after I publish this one.
That should be an interesting conversation if you're going to get into the the topic of him leaving Mars.
Yeah, I'm sure that we will. I'm sure that we'll chat about it now for sure. You know, it's gonna be that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm definitely gonna we're gonna talk about like which segues well into what I want to talk about next with so with Rand. What we're gonna talk about is growing Moz through you know like some of the things he's done to grow Moz you know to this point and that like they that they've done. I mean, you know, I say he's done like he's you know he's done so much. You know, he does so much for so many people. He's done so much for Credo as well. You know, like without him, Credo might not be around, you know, just because of his support and the support of Moz.
Right.
But we're going to talk about like growing, growing Moz, especially through conferences, right? Because that's been a big part, him, you know, out there speaking, will be, which, you know, I'd love to learn about, but you know what, but we're still going to get into the, you know, kind of like the stages, you know, that Moz has gone
sure.
through. And so I guess I'm interested with, bringing it back to Unbounce. What are some of the things that like that y'all have done, you know, stuff that's worked, but also like what are some of the harder learned lessons? I remember just real quick, one of the like the first time I ever like heard your name and heard Unbounce's name was when you published that like massive infographic with font size like 10 on Moz, right? And I remember looking at that and just being like how can someone produce something like this? Like this is incredible. It's like you basically taught people conversion rate optimization in an infographic.
Yeah,
it was huge, but yeah, take it away.
Yeah, that was the noob guide to online marketing.
That's it. Yep.
And it was basically a self-referential journey.
Yep.
Zero to hero, whatever. Of me becoming a marketer because I'd never done it before. So the day we started the company, I'll do marketing. So I wrote that as I was learning all of these this full stack marketing kind of approach and everything that I needed to know. So it took a lot of time. I mean, yeah, it was that infographic was 15 million pixels. There was a 15,000 word post that went with it.
Yeah.
And because I'd done a post on Moz before, because it's such a great model because you put it on UMoz and if it's anyone can do it.
Right.
And if it's good enough, it goes to the main blog and it blows up.
Yep.
And so I did the first one. Rand asked me to do a second, and I said, you know, oh, it's going to be epic.
Yep.
Because I like to verbalize pressure for myself so that I'll have to live up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then did that. And it broke smashed every record on the Moz blog for years. And he was like, when I showed it to him, he's like, why? Why are you giving this to us? Why aren't you keeping it on your own blog?
Yeah.
I'm like, because our blog's tiny right now.
Right.
And 10 people will see it.
Right. No one's going to see it.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it took a bit of courage to do that and a lot of belief that I could actually make something like that because it was part-time for several months creating that.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people, I think, and hopefully that can inspire people to try things like that. Because sometimes I guess you'd be afraid, like, how can I get permission to spend that long on something? Obviously, you know, I made that decision for myself,
right?
Being a co-founder, although there was still, you know, pressure to make sure I was doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that there are two main things that really gave us our start. There was that on the marketing side, and then it's how we chose some of our product direction. You know, more specifically, how we chose which other tools we would integrate with.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, you know, we chose MailChimp as our first one, which was very well aligned from a cultural perspective, also the size of the company and email marketing. It needs, you know, landing pages, email need landing pages to go to.
Yep.
And and the way we did that was we took a wall, we put stickies of every single marketing tech company. Not all of them. If you look at Scott Brinker's diagram, we didn't
MarTech,
all of those.
But back in the day, it was a significantly less crowded world.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think we did put 200 stickies on there of platforms that we could integrate with.
Mm-hmm.
And then we gauged them using compete.com and Alexa. Traffic was all we could go on.
Mm-hmm.
How bigger or smaller are they than us? So they're 200 times us. They're 10 times. They're 0.5 times.
Mm-hmm.
So then we could look at it and go, okay, we don't want to go for the massive ones because they're not going to do anything with us.
Right.
They don't care.
Right.
We're going to go for the ones who are still in rapid growth, have a cultural belief, core values and stuff that are similar to ours, and we'll go with those. So that's kind of how we made those decisions, and it worked brilliantly.
Interesting. So you kind of thought of them as your like as another set of customers. So like, you know, like I mean, especially like in the B2B space, like, you know, higher value sort of, you know, accounts, like, you know, if you're actually dealing with them, you're talking with them, you know, customer success is talking with them and all that, then, you know, you don't want to deal with people that are just like complete jerks, right? So it sounds like you
Exactly,
actually
yeah.
worked with the people that, like, you know, you might actually want to that you actually want to hang out with, right? And they're not just gonna like pull the rug out from underneath of you because of, you know, whatever reason.
Yeah, very much. And you see the truth in that when you, as you go through doing any co-marketing activities, some companies, whether it's just how they're structured, they won't end up really pulling their weight. Whether it's because they're big and they don't care, or whether it's because people are hamstrung in the organization to not really do, like, hit up their list or do this or that. But you quickly find partners who are willing to do the same stuff as you,
Great.
that are willing to do cool marketing. They'll put a funny video together or something as part of their thing, like beyond lead sharing and things like that. But they'll share in creating something that's excellent. And you know, then you build like permanent relationships with those companies, which is wonderful. I think that's the biggest joy I get from being a speaker are the relationships that I get to build with other speakers and the companies they come from.
Totally. Yeah, those I think that's which is one reason I want to talk with Rand about conferences as well. But you know, since your role now is, I mean, you're basically like the evangelist, right? Like your job now is to be out there speaking. And I think a lot of people undervalue those friendships and all that. When I look at the people that, you know, have been most just my biggest supporters, you know, in my business, it's almost all of them I met at conferences. There are a couple exceptions. Like I met Mike King just in Brooklyn because we moved there at the same time, but like I literally met Tom Critchlow at a conference, right? I met you at a conference. I met Rand at a conference. I met Rob Bucci at a conference, right? Rita Drysdale at a conference. Like, you know, just all these amazing people, met them all at conferences.
Yeah, it's completely changed my life becoming a speaker. Like me now to me 2.5 years ago, it's the jump is incredible, just personally for how I feel I am as a person, my confidence, what I think I can do, how excited I am for the future, all completely different because I've been doing that. And yeah, you know, I've said this many times, you get to a certain age, unless I'm an introvert, like quite a big, I mean, an ambivert. I'm in the middle. Certain places on stage, I'm an extrovert, but in life, I'm typically an introvert. So when you're an introvert and you're in your 40s, you don't meet that many new people. You don't make that many new friends. But when you're on the road with these other speakers who have a lot in common with you, and you know, you go to speaker dinners and you hang out and you watch each other talk, those relationships develop into something meaningful really quickly, and it's amazing because they're all amazing people. And any advice I could give to a founder would be like, you gotta get out there speaking, ideally sooner than I waited 4.5 years, 5 years. I mean, I wasn't ready before that, so I can't really say I should have done it earlier because I just wasn't there.
But that's really interesting because, you know, and this is something I wanted to talk with you about as well, because, you know, you started off heading up marketing and I think you had another role as well. And then now you're in this kind of evangelist role. So, you know, still a co-founder, but you've kind of gone where like the company has needed to go. But it also sounds like you've kind of gone where you personally like needed to go. Like what let's get behind the scenes a little bit, because I bet there were some like, you know, tough conversations that happened, all that, where you're like, you know, I'm not happy just leading like marketing anymore, or we have this phenomenal person that could take over, right? And I want to do this other thing. Like how did that work internally, making those shifts? I mean, I guess for you personally and also like for the company broader.
Yeah, it was fairly, I think maybe one of our, I'm going to make up the number, eighth hire or something, was Gia Lodi, and brought her on to run marketing, and she did an amazing job. That allowed me to step aside, so I became creative director, which is what I'd done in a couple of roles prior to Unbounce. I've done many
I didn't know
roles from
that.
developer, like hardcore back-end developer, through front-end and design, interaction design, usability. I've done kind of the full spectrum. So then I moved back to run the creative team and let her build the marketing team because she's better at that than I was. And Yeah, so then and then after a while, I mean, I don't like managing people. It doesn't work with my personality. I'm good at aspects of it, but I'm not good at being hard on people, or I'm not good at managing my time to the point where I have enough time to deal with them properly.
Yeah, you're a doer.
So yeah, being an individual contributor, which I'd never heard of the term before. Again, Rand was talking about it, and it suits me so well. And until you feel that, and now I see other people in the company doing that, and I see how their shoulders relax and they feel comfortable doing something more specific to who they are, and that's a wonderful thing. And although, I mean, I didn't know that was going to happen, right? I went to become a speaker, and then all of a sudden, holy, this is blowing up. I'm getting top rated, my first ever gig, and then I'm very competitive, so I just push myself to like try and be excellent at it. And I thought, oh, I'll do this for a year. Why would I want to do it longer than that? But now,
That's gonna be exhausting,
well, I just thought for some reason, totally irrational, that I'd do it, I'd have done it, and I'd do something else. But I absolutely love it. And as long as I have a new idea to talk about, I'll continue to do it. Yeah. So it's,
I mean, I think that's been one of the coolest things that I've, about like watching you kind of go through like over the last 7 years, 6 years knowing each other and like seeing kind of your progression. And like, I think you moved to Montreal for a little bit, right? And then you moved back to Vancouver, and you've been through these different roles and, you're constantly like doing new things, but also at the same company, which you're a co-founder of, right? Which is cool because most people will be like, all right, I'm tired of this now. I'm going to move on, to a new job. It's a bit different as a founder, right? Because like this is your baby, right? This is like, at least for this period of time, this is like your life's work, right? Not to say you won't have another company or whatever, but like, it's kind of your life's work, and you can't really like, it's hard to walk away from that.
I'm in it to win it for sure.
Totally. It goes back to that competition thing, right?
And I do feel very fortunate that I've been able to do that. I think I've felt that several times in my career where I've been at companies, like four of the founders worked at a gambling company called Bodog in Vancouver. It was an amazing company. It grew from like, I was employee 125 in like 2 years is 1200.
Unbelievable.
Got crazy near the end, but at the beginning, we had such a strict and amazing hiring process, which we learned from. And it was just an incredible, incredible team. And so many startups and great companies have come out of the team that was there in Vancouver. And so
It's
in
like
that role,
distilled.
I, yeah, in that role, I was afforded the freedom to kind of do that, mainly because I asked, like I, or told people I wanted different. Because yeah, in tech and marketing, people usually last 18 months to 2 years, and then they move on, especially the beginning of your career. So I was kind of like that, a microcosm of the job. I think I had six roles in that company, one of which Rick was my boss at the time. He was creative director, and I was an interaction designer. And his boss posted a job posting for a usability expert. I saw it and I was really interested in it, and I was like, nah, this is not happening. So I literally sprinted through the office, barged into his room in the middle of a meeting, and he's like, what do you want? I'm like, we need to talk. And he's like, okay, they were wrapping up. So he's like, all right, guys, leave. So I closed the door and he's like, what is it? I said, that job posting, take it down. That's mine. And he said, okay, all right, you got 2 minutes, tell me why. So I sold him on this, and he's like, all right, job's yours. So then I had to go back to Rick and say, hey, by the way, I don't work for you anymore.
Oh
Or
my
at least
gosh.
I'm not doing that job anymore. Sometimes you
You need to
have to
hire an
just
interaction designer.
so sometimes you just have to do those things.
Yeah.
And as I was doing that, I'd play video highlights of usability tests for our CEO, and he got so angry at the one I showed him, and he was just like, oh, this is awful. And his sidekick there said, all right, hire as many people as you want. like after 5 minutes of watching a video because he was so distressed at the bad experience people were having, and which was trying to place a bet,
right,
you know, on the sports right. book, which is obviously money.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
he was probably stressed by this. And
yeah, yeah.
sometimes it's just those things,
yeah.
asking, telling people, I'm going to do this, showing people, you know, what's wrong.
Then it was ballsy to take that video to like the CEO and, you know, C-suite and say like, our system is broken. You're literally not making as much money as you could. Right. Like
yeah.
most people would kind of try to count. I'm sure I don't like the word political necessarily, but like you kind of, you know, you didn't come in and be like, we're fucked. Right. But you're like, this is what's going on. Like, this is what the research says.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. And gave it to him straight up. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's what made me think, okay, conversion optimization, mm-hmm. I get that. I've been doing it already.
Yeah.
It just wasn't called that. So I'm going to bring that into the marketing concepts, you know, at Unbounce. And I guess I've always been, it's funny, we put on International CRO Day 2 years ago.
Okay. I remember that. Yep.
All day event. Last year it was CRO, it was just CRO Day and it was a smaller thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really disappointed. Because the first time, it was so much work, but it was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
The next year, a bit lackluster, a bit more focused,
yep.
but it just didn't feel impressive. And maybe and that's an ego thing.
Yep.
You know, the hashtag wasn't blowing up like it did the time before.
Yeah.
You know, these little vanity metrics, but they are sometimes important because I wasn't inspired
right.
by what had happened. So
right.
Nadia, who ran it, took that on board, and this year it's a full week.
Wow.
We're going to do CRO week. It's not been announced yet, but
yeah.
but
wait, also, when is that going to be?
I think it's in November. Hang on, we have the the domain.
Okay.
Not launched yet. Yeah, GoDaddy.
Yeah.
but then we made the decision to throw away CRO. Because none of us really like it anymore.
Okay.
We don't like the R.
Yep.
Everyone, all the optimizers now talk, it's conversion optimization. It's
yes,
not conversion rate
right.
optimization.
Right.
And also CRO is Croatia. So,
so yeah. Yeah.
we don't need that anymore.
Yeah.
It's just going to be marketing optimization week, I think.
Okay.
And because I love optimization, but it's more than conversion rate. It's
right.
everything.
Right.
It's everything in your marketing. It's everything in life. I love MacGyvering. That's like, you know, taking whatever you have in the room to solve a problem.
Yep.
You know, how do you living your life thinking like an optimizer, I think is the fastest way for someone to become a better marketer and a better business person.
Totally.
You know, whether it's things in the real world that you see are broken or in your marketing, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no excuse to say like, I wish I had, you know, I wish I had this. Like, if you wish you had it, go make it happen, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
When I first, you know, moved into this house and, you know, we moved into this house and I got my own office, I was like, I didn't have room for a whiteboard before. And I was like, the first thing I'm doing is I'm buying a whiteboard and putting it up on the, like, putting it up because that's how I think, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can't, you know, yeah, I'll diagram it out in Lucidchart or something like that. But then I'm like, no, the way I actually do it is, like, I go write it on the board. I might stay there for a week, you know, or 2 weeks, and I'll take a photo and lose it in my phone and, you know, do something else up there. But like, that's how I think, right? Like, you know,
yeah.
so when people are like, oh, it'd be great if I had a whiteboard. It's like, you have a credit card? You have Amazon? They cost $19 on Amazon. Like, don't get
yeah,
it. Yeah.
I'm exactly the same. I'm a whiteboard nerd.
Yeah.
You know, all my talks are designed on a giant whiteboard.
Yep.
Everything I do, I need a whiteboard. I totally understand what you're talking about. And I have whiteboards everywhere.
Yeah.
I have one in my new photo studio I built in our basement.
Yeah.
Also my office.
Yeah.
I have, and the way I designed it, you may have seen it on Facebook, I designed it, I wanted to do it in the sun. We have a deck out back and I wanted to be able to work outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to Nicole, what do you think about if I build this thing on the side of the deck? And she said, that looks hideous. That will ruin the deck. So I'm like, okay, well, how can I construct something that can be taken down?
Right.
So basically what I constructed a stand that can be bolted on but can be taken off. So all you see are two screws.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you see. I put it on and then mount, and I have these hooks and I mount the whiteboard on it. And I love it. It's just MacGyvering. It's
that's
just
awesome.
Like, how can I make this thing that's awesome? So now I can do that outside. There's another whiteboard in Nicole's office that is my old one. And I have a mini one I take in my bag when I travel.
No
It's like
way.
I
Wow.
love
I love it. I
whiteboards.
love it. That's awesome. Yeah, and that, I mean, that's just the constant, like, moving it forward, like, hey, I want this, build it. She's like, that looks awful. You're like, okay, I can make it better now, right? But like you initially shipped it and you could realize like, oh, I actually do want this up here, right? I actually am going to use it. And then now like how do I make it, permanent or like removable or, or whatever to fit, to fit your needs. I think that's what building a company is about too, right? Like you've done in your career, move from, step to step to step and no step is the final end, right? And I think that's one of the most important takeaways of this conversation is there's no like final end there. People get so hung up on like, but what if I don't like it? Or what if like, what if it's the wrong button color, when I first start? It's like, and I hate it when people talk about testing button colors, as I know you do too. I'm sure we can talk for another 30 minutes on that. But, people are so afraid of doing it wrong from the start, and it's completely not about that. Careers aren't about that. Life isn't about that. Businesses aren't about that, right? Like, ship something, you can always change it. There are very, very, very few things in life you cannot change.
Totally,
And I think
and
you're
that's
evidence of that, and unbalanced is evidence of that.
yeah, and that's the discovery process. If I mean, I could have just done it, and then it would have, she would have been very disappointed, and I would have had to take it down. But just that one question. I drew a sketch on a whiteboard of a whiteboard stand that I was going to build on this thing. And I said, "What do you think? Ugly as hell." One question was all it took to make me think, okay, now I have to go design
Right.
something.
What if I did
And
this? Yeah.
I brought it back and I said, "What if it's like that? And this is all you see?" She's like, "Totally."
Acceptable. That's awesome.
So
I love
all it
it.
took.
I love it. Well, Ollie, thank you so much for this conversation. I know I've learned a ton. I'm sure it's gonna be super valuable. Where can people find you online? And where are you speaking this fall? This will probably be published, end of October, so.
Twitter is the fastest way to reach me. Just Ollie Gardner on Twitter. I mean, you can email me, ollie@unbounce.com. But yeah, Twitter is usually where I respond the most quickly because I have that guilt of like not letting, my inbox is terrible, but on Twitter, I don't like seeing an unresponded
Yep,
to
notification zero.
thing. And then, so where am I speaking next? I'm off to Europe a couple of times, Dublin on the 2nd of November. I got a little bit of a break now, which is
Okay,
nice because half my
nice.
time I spend it advising the marketing team.
Okay.
So it's nice I can settle into that. And as a speaker coach, which
Yep.
is like one of my new things. I want Unbounce to be the first company people go to when they're trying to get a speaker of any
Nice,
kind.
nice. Love it.
Then Prague, Bucharest, Ottawa, and SF.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, I will also get that list from you and put links in if people want to come join you there. And yeah, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And best of luck with the speaking gigs and Unbounce, and hopefully I'll see you at one of those soon enough.
Definitely. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure, and best of luck with Credo as well.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Speak to you soon.
Cheers.